This morning I'm going to speak on the topics of discrimination and ethnic cleansing. Now these are terms that are not exactly given favorable press today, but it's becoming more apparent that these terms are part of a critical key to understanding many of the important things that are going on around us today. They're important also to understand what has been going on in the past and what will happen in the future. They thus are a key to solving many of our social, political, and economic problems, both nationally and internationally. Discrimination is an absolute necessity of all aspects of life. It determines what you wear, who you associate with or make friends with, what you eat, your occupation, where you live, who you marry, the type of car you drive, the religion and politics you follow. In short, it is the key to our livelihood and survival. Now here's a point to write down and remember the rest of your life. Discrimination is a subject grounded in law. What law? All and every type of law. If you look at any type of law, discrimination is a part of it. It is found within the law of nature, the law of physics, the law of God, the foundational law of America, Anglo-Saxon common law, constitutional law, international law, military law, maritime law, and so forth. Law discriminates. That's one of its inherent functions and characteristics. What does law do? It determines what is right and what is wrong. It determines what course of action can be taken and what cannot. It determines the different status of certain things. It discriminates. In biblical times, this law was made known through the priests. Ezekiel 44:23, God says to the priests that they are to, quote, teach my people the difference between the holy and profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. The law of God dictates that some things are clean and some things are unclean, that some things and some persons are holy and some are unholy, some are good, some are evil. It discriminates. But the priests are not teaching this law today. The fundamental law of this land had drawn lines of distinctions between Christianity and other religions, between men and women, between free and bond, between the white race and the colored race, and they determined that certain things were right and wrong. It discriminated. By that law, free white Christian men had political rule. But over time, due to Jewish infiltration into government and politics and finance and media, we have had a change in law, and thus a change in discrimination. We have now Talmudic law in many areas, which says the Christian can never rule over the Jew. Yes, Talmudic law discriminates. All law discriminates. Talmudic law teaches that the Jew is above the Goyim, or the Christian. The Jew must not associate with the Goyim. The Jew who injures a Christian commits no sin, is not legally liable, as he would if he injures a Jew. The Christian cannot be used as a witness against a Jew. The Goyim are not allowed to participate in Jewish festivals. Jews can lend money with usury to the Goyim, not to themselves, and so forth. Now, if the Jews have their own country and exercise such laws within their own territory, that's no big deal. But they bring that law into every nation they move into and try to establish it. The fundamental law, whether it's Anglo-Saxon law or the law of God, cannot coexist with Talmudic law. One or the other is going to dominate. And the people who are unaware of this conflict are going to lose out. Their law and their discrimination is going to lose out. So with the law of the heathen taking root and dominating, we have seen a lack of discrimination according to our law. The result is the displacement of common law, the law of God, constitutional law, or anything else attached to the white Christian people. We thus see things contrary to our law: abortion, universal suffrage, victimless crimes, usury. Equality and multiculturalism have been set up so that the white man cannot exercise his law of discrimination, while the Jew is free to exercise his. There is reverse discrimination against the white Christian population, especially the white male. Civil rights and welfare are instituted to elevate the colored races, while hate laws and hate crimes are instituted to suppress any discrimination against them. It thus can be said that a major problem today is that we do not have the discrimination of our law. We have discrimination by Talmudic law. Discrimination under our law is essential to our existence and survival. Without it, there is disorder, confusion, moral debauchery, government oppression, a degeneration of society and family. Without it, there can't even be a concept of a chosen people. So all the churches teach that everyone is God's people. Thus, over the years, discrimination by our law has been made out to be one of the worst evils that anybody can think of. Formerly, discrimination had no negative connotations. In fact, it was rather complimentary to say that this person was a discriminating man or a discriminating woman. By definition, discrimination means that you are choosing or rejecting something in a proper or careful manner. The opposite of discrimination is indiscriminate. Indiscriminate means that you're choosing wrongly, haphazardly, without the facts. Now, our legal history clearly reveals, of course, that the law on discrimination has gone. Discrimination of race, sex, religion, creed had existed since colonial times. It existed in the Constitution, in all of our institutions. It was followed by governors, legislators, cities, and states. After the war between the states, there was an attempt to eliminate the law on discrimination with the Reconstruction period and the War Amendments, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments. Yet most discrimination did remain and was upheld. Now in 1896, there was a landmark case on discrimination, the case of Plessy versus Ferguson. Plessy was a man of 1/8 African descent, 7/8 white. He boarded a train car that was designated for white passengers. The conductor ordered him out of the car and said he was to sit in the car for Negroes. When he refused, he was arrested, tried, and convicted for violating the Louisiana law on segregation. On appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, Plessy claimed that the statute violated the 13th and 14th Amendments. Now, the Supreme Court had a dilemma. They were confronted with two opposing laws, with two different types of discrimination. If they upheld the fundamental law of America, then all this that had been established by way of the war and the war amendments and the Reconstruction period would go down, and that would almost cause a war. If they upheld the Talmudic law, the law of the heathen, and allowed this type of integration, then that would have caused such chaos at that time that it would almost result in another war. What were they going to do? Well, they came up with a compromise through the doctrine of separate but equal. In other words, you can have separate facilities, but they have to be equal. And the implication was that, well, blacks and whites were separate but equal. Yet they never said that blacks and whites were equal anyway. Now, if two persons or two things are equal, then what are the grounds or justification for their separation? We have different facilities for men and women. That decision was not decided upon law. It had nothing to do with our fundamental law. It was basically decided upon social science, faulty social science at that. They determined that the separate but equal doctrine was socially unacceptable, and they relied heavily on the 14th Amendment. But the court never said that blacks and whites were equal. And as far as I know, no court has ever said that. They talk about equal rights and equal opportunity and things like that. Now the question that is always asked, what's the solution? How can we stop this? A common solution is that we should get rid of the Federal Reserve. Many have noticed that corruption and evil just flow from the Federal Reserve system. It's involved in foreign aid, financing our enemies, and financing abortion. It puts us in economic slavery. It does away with a lot of our rights. It's something evil. But why is that? Is paper money and credit something evil? Well, they are foolish and they are problematic at times and they are unconstitutional, but they're not evil. It is a well-known fact that the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, and other major banks are Jewish-owned and controlled. The paper and credit belongs to them. It's their property. They don't give away the Federal Reserve notes. They don't sell them. They don't exchange them or barter them. They loan them out. They retain possession, they retain ownership of them. It's just like if I loan you my ink pen, you can't go around to the next person and say it's yours. It's mine. I still have the ownership of it. Since we are using their property, we have to pay a usage or a privilege tax. And a privilege tax is a type of excise tax. Formerly, the income tax was held to be a property tax because the gold and silver and perhaps treasury notes and bonds and things like that were our property. It was ours, so it was a property tax. But eventually, it was declared by the states and the U.S. Supreme Court to be an excise tax, a privilege tax. Since we have the property of the International Jewish Establishment, they have the right to monitor and document the transfer of their property from one entity to another by way of social security numbers, bank account numbers, tax ID numbers, W-2 forms, and so forth. It's not a violation of law that's going on. It's a fundamental law being followed. Borrower is the servant of the lender. As long as the money system exists, we will be in bondage. But the solution will never be brought about by lobbying Congress, or trying to get the Federal Reserve abolished, or trying to get some president elected who's going to do away with it. The solution will be by discrimination, racial discrimination. The money system is evil because it is owned and controlled by people who are evil, who are cursed of God, and thus the money system is inherently evil. The money issue is a racial issue and a spiritual issue, but most conservatives and patriots will never admit that. The solution to many problems we experience can only be remedied by discrimination of race. Hate laws, welfare, crime, political conspiracy, subversion, wars, and so forth. Now this subject of wars is a good example to help understand the need for discrimination and ethnic cleansing. Let's look at the reason for the NATO attack upon the Serbian people in Yugoslavia. The bottom line here is discrimination. The Serbs are a European Slavic people of Christian heritage. And they formed the Serbian Kingdom in 1918. Since then, it has been infiltrated by other types, Islamic types, and Albanians. The Albanians are more like the Greeks, or a people with a Mediterranean stock. They have a different culture, a different religion, and a different language than the Serbs. The Serbians realized that their nation was being adversely affected by the Albanian people in their province of Kosovo. The Christian Serbs wanted the Albanians to go back to Albania. They instituted a program of deportation. The separation was an act of discrimination based upon the law of self-preservation, preserving their society, their culture, and their race. Now, the establishment has a more pernicious name for this type of discrimination or segregation. They call it ethnic cleansing. It's when one people try to separate another people from their midst. The war against Serbia by NATO and America is said to be for humanitarian purposes, to preserve the human rights of the Albanians. Well, like all wars the international start, it is done for their benefit, to protect their commercial interests, and so forth. The humanitarian issue is just a cover for the ignorant masses. There is also an issue of discrimination involved which could affect the Jewish elite in Yugoslavia. If Albanians can be expelled, then so can the Jews. And without access to the land, they cannot exploit the land. They cannot exact usury, they cannot sell their merchandise, they cannot get the oil and the minerals, they cannot distribute drugs or whatever else might enrich them in the land. The deportation of all races except Serbians from the land would create a void on the globe that is free of plutocratic parasites and interracial strife. Thus the nation can develop and prosper. They would become a shining example of a Jewish free enterprise state, which all nations around them would want to follow. A Christian state that has complete autonomy is a fearful thing to the Jewish elite. Yugoslavia was going to be ethnically homogeneous. No Albanian influence, no Islamic influence, no Jewish influence. And that had to be stopped. Nationalism, especially white nationalism, is a dreadful thing. As the Jewish author Maurice Samuel said in his book, You Gentiles, quote, "The identification of race with state is an evil, one that the Jew must overcome." They regard nationalism as a war crime. The Yugoslavian people have four counts of war crimes against them, one of which is deportation. If humanitarianism is the objective of intervention and the war against Serbia, why is there no consistency in such cases? And when did ethnic cleansing or deportation become a war crime? Why was there no intervention in Rwanda in 1994 when a million people were killed in a genocidal civil war? The United States did not intervene. Being in the jungles of Central Africa, it did not affect the commercial interests of the plutocrats. It did not discriminate against the Jews in any way. It basically was blacks killing blacks. And so nobody really cared. And whatever faction would gain supremacy, the Jewish elite could easily control. In Croatia, the U.S. and the U.N. accepted the ethnic cleansing of 300,000 Serbs because the killing of a white Christian people weakened their position in that country and in Bosnia. The U.S. accepted the Turkish regime's brutal repression of the Kurdish minority, resulting in many more deaths than in Kosovo. It was not regarded as a war crime, as was the forced displacement of ethnic Albanians. And in America, the people in this country had put Indians in reservations. They moved them off the land. That was the type of ethnic cleansing. And we deport Mexicans all the time, but they don't want to make that type of connection because then they can never use that word as a psychological ploy to get their way. When the Israelis attack, kill, and expel Palestinians or Arabs from the land that they have lived in for centuries, the U.S. and the U.N. ignore this ethnic cleansing. The slaughter of the white population in Rhodesia and consequent ethnic cleansing was of no concern to the U.S. government or the United Nations. Apparently, there was no war crime when the Soviet Union killed millions of white Russians in the Ukraine, or when they forced millions of Germans out of Eastern Europe after World War II. The Islamic terrorists of Pakistan have expelled nearly 300,000 Hindus from the Kashmir Valley since 1990. Nobody seems to care in the international scene. But when Iraq was taking control of Kuwait, the UN stepped in because their oil interests were being compromised, not because they had humanitarian concern for the Kuwaitis. Apparently, ethnic cleansing is bad only when it hurts the interests of the international Jews or affects their status and control, but is acceptable when it benefits them. This concept of ethnic cleansing is not something new. There are many biblical examples of what would be called today ethnic cleansing. When Israel came out of Egypt, a mixed multitude went up with them, Exodus 12:38. It caused them to sin. They were instrumental in the worship of the golden calf, Exodus 32, which brought God's anger upon Israel. So Moses interceded and spoke with God, acknowledging the sin and what they were to do, Exodus 33:16. So we shall be separate, your people and I, from all the people who are upon the face of the earth. They had to separate out the mixed multitude, ethnic cleansing. When Israel was to enter the Promised Land, God warned Israel about the seven other Canaanite nations or races that inhabited the land. He told them not to make covenants with them, not to intermarry with them, not to follow their abominations. In Numbers 33:52, he says, "You shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land. You shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land." Deuteronomy 7:2, "You shall conquer them, utterly destroy them." That's the definite case of ethnic cleansing. In Judges 6, the Midianites, Amalekites, and the people of the east had infiltrated and taken over the land and government, and Israel was greatly oppressed by them. God raised up Gideon and his army of 300 to rout them out. Ethnic cleansing. In Ezra 9 and 10, the Israel nation had allowed the Canaanites, Hittites, Ammonites, Moabites, Amorites in the land. They followed their pagan ways, and some of the people and priests and leaders intermarried with them. Nehemiah called it a sin, and he had the law of God read to them. Nehemiah 13:3, quote, "Now it came to pass when they had heard the law that they had separated from Israel all the mixed multitude." That would be an example of ethnic cleansing. As we see here, the law discriminates. It discriminates between one people and the other. Ethnic cleansing was important to the history of Israel as a reminder of their past. Psalm 44:2 says, the psalmist recalls how the God of our fathers did drive out the heathen with his hand, and how he did afflict the people and cast them out. Psalm 88, "Thou hast brought a vine out of Egypt, thou hast cast out the heathen and planted it." Ethnic cleansing. The heathen were removed out of the land, and the vine, the people of Israel, were planted in it. There are also prophecies involving ethnic cleansing in the Bible. Isaiah 13 describes God's judgment on Babylon, which is symbolic of the dominant world power. With the fall of Babylon, verse 14, it says, "Every man shall turn to his own people and flee everyone to his own land." And this brings about the restoration of the Israel people. For some reason, these people are leaving the land. It's a type of ethnic cleansing or segregation. Joel 2:19 and 20, God says, "I will remove far off from you a northern army, the northern army, and will drive him into a land barren and desolate." And in Joel 3, God will judge the nations that have been enemies to his people in the valley of Jehoshaphat. And he tells his people to prepare for war against them. In verse 17, it says, "No stranger shall ever pass through their land again." So through the instrumentality of war, there's going to be ethnic cleansing. Obadiah 17, this is another interesting one. It says in verse 17, "But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance." How is deliverance going to come about? "And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them. And there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken it." Here we have ethnic cleansing described by a burning process. In Micah 4, it describes the deliverance of the people again, and how many nations are gathered against thee, in verse 11. Verse 13, "Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thy horn iron, and I will make thy hoofs brass, and thou shalt beat in pieces many people." So here again, ethnic cleansing by way of war. Malachi 3, verse 18 says this, "Then shall you, Israel, return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not." So here we're going to learn discrimination between the wicked and the righteous according to God's law. And what are they going to do with that law of discrimination? Chapter 4, verse 3, "And you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet." Again, you have a type of ethnic cleansing. Zechariah 1:21 describes the four craftsmen or carpenters coming to cast out the horns of the nations which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter them. Horn describes enemies, the ruling powers in the land, and how these four craftsmen are going to rout them out. Type of ethnic cleansing, segregation. Zechariah 14 speaks of the day of the Lord. Verse 21 it says, "And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts." The Canaanite was there, and some way is removed. Ethnic cleansing. Matthew 13 speaks of a parable of the tares and wheat. It says that in the end of the age, tares, or the children of the wicked, shall be gathered together and burned. Here again you have this type of segregation described as a burning process. Matthew 25:32 says that when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, all nations shall be gathered before him, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats, the sheep on the right and the goats on the left. Then shall he say also to them on the left hand, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire." Again, ethnic cleansing, separation of two people. Again, it's also a type of burning process it's described as. Luke 19:27, "There will be a time when Jesus will say, 'Bring here those enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them and slay them before me.'" Another type of segregation. There's also prayers
for ethnic cleansing. Psalms 2, verses 7 through 9. It says, "The Lord has said unto me, Thou art my Son, this day I have begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel." So here you got people in a land, and the Israel people are going to come in there and possess it and destroy the people that are there. Ethnic cleansing. Psalm 83 describes an imprecatory prayer to destroy those who conspire against Israel. Edom, Moab, Ammon, Amalek, Philistine, house of God, 2 Chronicles 36:14. The presence of the heathen corrupts Israel's culture and government, Judges 2:19. What's the total time?
9:42.
The heathen caused Israel to profane God's name, Ezekiel 36:20. Strangers in the sanctuary polluted, Psalm 79:1. The people of Israel need to be cleansed from the pagan ways of foreigners, Nehemiah 13:30. The mixing with other races is regarded as a corruption of Israel's holy seed, Ezra 9:2. Now when something becomes defiled, polluted, corrupted, or profaned, it needs to be cleansed or sanctified by removing that which causes this problem. An alien people brought about these conditions. Thus, segregation or ethnic cleansing is a biblical solution for this defilement, corruption, polluting, and so forth. And God says the priests are to teach the people the difference between the holy and the profane. Ethnic cleansing has a long history. Most nations at one time or another have resorted to it, either by way of deportation, banishment, excommunication, segregation, war, restrictive immigration, political coups, and so forth. This concept is especially revealed in light of the history of the Jews. The Jews have been expelled from nearly every country in which they have settled. Throughout European history, the Jews have promoted revolutions and political subversion, have been money lenders, exacting usury, and thus possessing the property of the people. They've caused social unrest, engaged in unfair business dealings, have tried to monopolize markets, business, and industries, have corrupted the morals of the population. And because of these persistent characteristics of the Jews, ethnic cleansing was commonly resorted to as a matter of self-preservation. The Jews say that this is persecution, but never admit that it is their characteristics, their greed, aggressiveness, and zeal to dominate that brings this about. Now, I didn't make up this term ethnic cleansing. The Jewish establishment did. They promoted it. They made it something that's regarded as evil. But it seems to fit quite well. The Jews know what the Bible says and what God requires of his people, to be separate from the heathen. They know their own history of expulsion. They thus instinctively or subconsciously came up with this term of ethnic cleansing, and have made it a great evil with their propaganda. In fact, the act of ethnic cleansing is made to be just about the most horrible thing that any nation could be engaged in or attempt to do. It is an evil of such magnitude that the whole world must unite to suppress it and stop it and bring it to an end, as they did in Yugoslavia. As Clinton recently said, the ethnic cleansing was ended with an ethnically diverse military. The whole world had to bring this to an end. And Clinton really knows the importance of race in this matter. History and the Bible shows that ethnic cleansing done by our people has never been a bad thing, but has always had beneficial results. But it always has negative results for the heathen, the Antichrist, the Canaanite, and the Jews. The Jews know that they can only prosper when allowed to freely dwell in a host nation. Thus, the concepts of discrimination, segregation, or expulsion are the greatest threat to Jewry. They must suppress or annihilate every aspect of it and anything that could lead to expulsion. Any manner of discrimination or feelings of nationalism or revealing of history or Christian preference cannot be allowed. Only their discrimination is allowed. This then explains many of the things that are going on today. It explains the reverse discrimination against our people. It explains why the Jews are concerned about minority rights, why they form organizations like the NAACP, the ACLU, the ADL, to protect the colored races from discrimination, why the black is promoted above the white, given preferential treatment, is made out to be a hero in the movies, why pluralism and multiculturalism and universal equality are promoted. You see, the Negro and the colored races serve as a buffer between the Jew and the white man's law on discrimination. As long as the Negro is in society and is regarded as an equal and is not discriminated against, the Jew knows that he too is relatively safe from discrimination. The Jewish elite knows that if the Negro is ever expelled from this land, that he is not far behind, because the same law that expelled the Negro would expel him. Thus it is always the Jew or some Jewish organization that rushes to the defense of the Negro or other non-white person. Not because the Jews care about them, but because these other races act as a buffer or a protective hedge that keeps discrimination at a safe distance from the Jews. And also the other races serve to weaken God's people, which helps in their matter too. The solution then to a great many of our political, social, and economic problems is by resorting to the fundamental law of discrimination. But it's a bit of a paradox. We have to institute an act of discrimination to get our law of discrimination back. So if we ever have it back, you want to guard it and protect it, because it's 100 times easier doing that than trying to get the whole thing back once it's been overturned. Our problems today are not the result of just ordinary corruption or subversion. It is due to an extraordinary situation. And extraordinary problems require extraordinary remedies and solutions. So if you want to solve the money problem, oppressive taxation, crime, moral debauchery, abortion, then pray and seek God's counsel on discrimination and ethnic cleansing in this country. Because somehow, some way, it must come about if we are ever to regain what God had originally given us. Thank you.